Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. We're going to share some of the experience of Dr. Eben Alexander from his book Proof of Heaven. Now, I don't want to share all of it because it's an entire book. And also, he's a very medically... he knows his medical stuff. And so there's a lot of medical commentary. But let me just give a preface here to say that he had a form of bacterial meningitis in which essentially his brain, during the time of his near-death experience, was dead. I mean, it was no brain activity, gone. I mean, and this was the kind of situation. And this is the thing that makes this such a big deal to people. The in the book Proof of Heaven is that, medically speaking, his body was absolutely dead. There was no brain activity. He was not dreaming. He could not dream. He didn't have the capacity for dreaming. But he was dead. And then he comes back. And he was an atheist. He was a sworn atheist. His science was his religion, if you will. Medical, just, I mean, he could not have been convinced that there was a God of any kind or anything of the sort. When you die, you're dead. You're gone. So his body was dead and gone, but that wasn't the end of his conscious experience. And so, in fact, that I don't want to say that's where the book starts, because you get to chapter 5 when you first get to see what happens after he's gone, if you will. Again, he's a doctor. What do you expect? But I'm going to share part of chapter 5. Just to give you a feel for what he's experiencing. But he goes on and on about this darkness that he experiences, which is not necessarily pleasant, but also not terrifying, per se, or anything. You might call this a distressing aspect to his near-death experience. I think it certainly fits much of the bill. But then we'll go on to read the more interesting and beautiful part, simply because, anyway. We'll start with this. This is starting on page 29 of Eben Alexander's book, Proof of Heaven. Darkness, but a visible darkness, like being submerged in mud, yet able to see through it, or maybe dirty jello describes it better. Transparent, but in a blurry, claustrophobic, suffocating kind of a way. Consciousness, but consciousness without memory or identity, like a dream where you know what's going on around you, but have no idea really of who or what you are. Sound, too, a deep, rhythmic pounding, distant yet strong, so that each pulse of it goes right through you, like a heartbeat? A little, but darker, more mechanical, like the sound of metal against metal, as if a giant subterranean blacksmith is pounding an anvil somewhere off in the distance. Pounding it so hard that the sound vibrates through the earth or the mud or whatever it is that you are. I didn't have a body, not one that I was aware of, anyway. I was simply there, in this place of pulsing, dark, pounding darkness. At the time, I might have called it a primordial, but at the time it was going on, I didn't know this word. In fact, I didn't know any words at all. The words used here registered much later, when back in the world. I was writing down my recollections. Language, emotion, logic, these were all gone, as if I had regressed back to some state of being from the very beginnings of life, as far back, perhaps, as the primitive bacteria that, unbeknownst to me, had taken over my brain and shut it down. How long did I reside in this world? I have no idea. When you go to a place where there's no sense of time as we experience it in the ordinary world, accurately describing the way it feels is next to impossible. When it was happening, when I was there, I felt like I, whatever I was, had always been there and would always continue to be. Okay, I'm going to jump now because he goes on talking about, oh, this is, you know, mud, and you know, it's just, it's just this eternal mud is what it kind of describes as. Yeah, it goes on and says, you know, was it months, years, eternity? I don't know, you know. But he was there in this place for an unknown period of time. And then chapter 7, a whole chapter, two chapters later, he begins this. And this is on page 38 of his book. Something had appeared in the darkness. And I'll say this too. He didn't go on for two full chapters about the darkness. He went for one full chapter about the darkness. And then he went back to what the medical people were experiencing, and his family and so forth were experiencing. And I will say too, you know, we've talked about detailed experiencers versus gloss over kind of experiencers. He is a detailed experiencer, detail-oriented experiencer. So, you know, great gift to us, and yet you get a whole chapter about mud. So, going on. Something had appeared in the darkness. Turning slowly, it radiated fine filaments of white gold light, and as it did so, the darkness around me began to splinter and break apart. Then I heard a new sound, a living sound, like the richest, most complex, most beautiful piece of music you've ever heard. Growing in volume as a pure white light descended, it obliterated the monotonous mechanical pounding that seemingly for eons had been my only companion up until then. The light got closer and closer, spinning around and around and generating those filaments of pure white light that I now saw were tinged here and there with hints of gold. Then, at the very center of the light, something else appeared. I focused my awareness hard, trying to figure out what it was. An opening? An opening. I was no longer looking at the slowly spinning light at all, but through it. The moment I understood this, I began to move up fast. There was a whooshing sound, and in a flash, I went through the opening and found myself in a completely new world, the strangest, most beautiful world I'd ever seen. Brilliant, vibrant, ecstatic, stunning. I could heap on one adjective after another to describe what this world looked like and felt like, but they'd all fall short. I felt like I was being born, not reborn or born again, just born. Below me, there was a countryside. It was green, lush, and earth-like. It was earth, but at the same time, it wasn't. It was like when your parents take you back to a place where you spent some years as a very young child. You don't know the place, or at least you think you don't. But as you look around, something pulls at you, and you realize that a part of yourself, a part way deep down, does remember the place after all, and is rejoicing at being back there again. I was flying, passing over trees and fields, streams and waterfalls, and here and there, people. There were children, too, laughing and playing. The people sang and danced around in circles, and sometimes I'd see a dog running and jumping among them, as full of joy as the people were. They wore simple yet beautiful clothes, and it seemed to me that the colors of these clothes had the same kind of living warmth as the trees and flowers that bloomed and blossomed in the countryside around them. A beautiful, incredible dream world. Except it wasn't a dream. Though I didn't know where I was or even what I was absolutely sure of one thing. This place I'd suddenly found myself in was completely real. The word real expresses something abstract, and it's frustratingly ineffective at conveying what I'm trying to describe. Imagine being a kid and going to a movie on a summer day. Maybe the movie was good and you were entertained as you sat through it, but when the show ended and you filed out of the theater and back into the deep, vibrant, welcoming warmth of the summer afternoon, And as the air and the sunlight hit you, you wondered why on earth you'd wasted this gorgeous day sitting in a dark theater. Multiply that feeling 1,000 times, and you still won't be anywhere close to what I felt like where I was. I don't know how long exactly I flew along. Time in this place was different than from the simple linear time that we experience on Earth, and is as hopelessly difficult to describe as every other aspect of it. But at some point, I realized that I wasn't alone up there. Someone was next to me, a beautiful girl with high cheekbones and deep blue eyes. She was wearing the same kind of pleasant-like clothes that the people in the village down below wore. Golden brown tresses framed her lovely face. We were writing together on an intricately patterned surface, alive with indescribable and vivid colors, the wing of a butterfly. In fact, millions of butterflies were around us, vast fluttering waves of them dipping down into the greenery and coming back up around us again. It wasn't any single discrete butterfly that appeared, but all of them together, as if they were a river of life and color moving through the air. We flew in lazy looped formations past blossoming flowers and buds on trees that opened as we flew near them. The girl's outfit was simple, but its colors, powder blue in indigo and pastel orange peach, had the same overwhelming, super vivid aliveness that everything else in the surroundings had. She looked at me with a look that, if you saw it for a few moments, would make your whole life up to that point worth living, no matter what had happened in it so far. It was not a romantic look. It was not a look of friendship. It was a look that was somehow beyond all these, beyond all the different types of love that we have here on Earth. It was something higher, holding all of those other kinds of love within itself, at the same time being more genuine and pure than all of them. Without using any words, she spoke to me. The message went through me like a wind, and I instantly understood that it was true. I knew so in the same way that I knew that the world around us was real, was not some fantasy, passing and insubstantial. The message had three parts, and if I had to translate them into earthly language, I'd say they ran something like this. You are loved and cherished dearly forever. You have nothing to fear. And there's nothing you can do wrong. The message flooded me with a vast and crazy sensation of relief. It was like being handed the rules to the game I'd been playing all my life without fully understanding it. We will show you many things here, the girl said, again, without actually using these words, but by driving our conceptual essence directly into me. But eventually, you will go back, she continues. To this, I had only one question. Back where? Remember who's talking to you right now. I'm not a soft-headed sentimentalist. I know what death looks like. I know what it feels to have a living person whom you spoke to and joked with in better days become a lifeless object on an operating table after you've struggled for hours to keep the machine of their body working. I know what suffering looks like and the answerless grief on the faces of loved ones who have lost someone they've never dreamed they could lose. I know my biology, and while I'm not a physicist, I'm no slouch at it either. I know the difference between fantasy and reality, and I know that the experience I'm struggling to give you the vaguest, most completely unsatisfactory picture of was the single most real experience of my life. In fact, the only competition for it in the reality department was what came next. And that's the end of that chapter. I'm going to go ahead and stop there. I'm sorry, because it goes on. It's beautiful. But that gives you a taste of Ibn Alexander's experience of the other side, and just a sampling of it. There's a lot here that's just beautiful. First off, and not beautiful, the mud. What is that? What was he experiencing? Was he a spirit residing in his broken, unworking mind? Was his heart even beating at this time? If his brain activity has stopped, I would imagine his heartbeat would have stopped too. But maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to go back and read the previous chapters again, as well as the later chapters, in case it came up later. But this muddy realm that is dark, and you know, it sounds similar to the void, but much less pleasant, because the void, I gather, is kind of this waiting place of just complete silent darkness where there's no light, no, I don't want to say there's no perception, because people often see other people in it, or sometimes they'll see their own body in it, or whatever. He was seeing nothing, perceiving nothing, had no memory of himself, or the earth, or anything prior to the earth. He was just existing in this place, and he had no sense to be able to tell how long. And that, you know, it weeks, years, what, he didn't know. He had no idea. Which itself sounds like a serious form of hell, but it didn't last forever. And when it changed, he says that he saw, let's see, let me go back. Okay, something appeared in the darkness, and it was this white gold light, and that light got brighter, came closer, and the darkness began to splinter and break apart. And he had described this darkness as a physical darkness. Now, often when people describe this light, and I think I'm gathering this similar description when he says that the white light was tinged here and there with hints of gold, and then of course with the darkness splintering around him, many people describe not the light itself, but the light surrounding them that's coming from the light as almost glitter-like. There being these little flicks of light, flicks of color, and splashes of glittering just light. I mean, the flecks, which is interesting. You know, what is that? I don't know. You know, fairy dust? I don't know how else you could describe it. And he seems to be hinting at some such thing. And then he's riding on a butterfly wing. Isn't that interesting? A butterfly wing. And yet it's not clear, at least to me, whether this is one big butterfly that's made of a bunch of tiny butterflies, or if it's just a bunch of tiny butterflies and he's perceiving it as, you know, and he's just describing it as flying on a butterfly wing. Because it almost sounds like he's flying along over this beautiful landscape, this rural green countryside. And he's surrounded, like he says, by millions of butterflies. Now, I don't know, you know, how one would detect millions versus, you know, if you saw 700 versus 70,000, you know, how much a difference does it really look between, you know, 7,000 and 700,000? And this is talking millions, so well over that. Basically, countless is what I gather, butterflies, which it makes you wonder, how can you see the countryside if you're surrounded by butterflies? And yet in the spirit realm you're seeing everything, and you know, there's not obstruction of vision between things. It's like a perfect x-ray vision where everything can be perfectly opaque, and yet perfectly you can see everything around it from every angle. You know, I don't know how that works, but there may be some of that here. Why butterflies? I don't know. Have to read the book, I guess. You may mention it more. I've read some of it. I've not read the whole thing yet. But I would like to mention this girl that he sees, with the dark hair and the high cheekbones and so forth. And maybe we'll read more of that another time. But she turns out to be, because Eben, or Eben, I'm not sure which way it's pronounced. I've heard both. Is adopted. And his, if I'm remembering this right, and forgive me if I'm getting it wrong, but his mother, who his biological mother, had had another child who had died, and it was a girl. And it wasn't, he didn't even meet his family, his his biological family, until after this experience. And he was looking through pictures with the family with them and sees this girl. And he's like, "Ah, that's the girl. I saw her when I went to the other side. That was my guide. I always thought she was just some angel kind of thing, you know. But it turns out she was family, his sister, biological sister, which is beautiful. Isn't that cool? So that's the beginning of Eben Alexander's experience. And he goes into much more detail about that after experience and more about his experience on the other side. But he starts talking about different things such as music and a core, which I gather to be like the light, the source, whatever. And all of this is found in Proof of Heaven, a Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife by Eben Alexander. And so if you want evidences of there being consciousness outside of the body, this is a good one, and I recommend the book. So with that, let's reiterate the phone number here. If you will call 970-633-2278, which is also 970-NDE-CAST, then you can leave us a message. You can share your experience, ask a question, just give a comment, or, you know, whatever you'd like. I'd love to put it on the show. And please don't swear, because I'll have to edit that. And because I try to keep this family-oriented, and I allow my kids to listen to this show, so let's keep it clean. And one other thing, if you are enjoying this show, please leave a review on iTunes, simply because that helps others to find it. iTunes has an algorithm wherewith the more reviews there are, the more they start realizing, oh, people are listening and they like this, or they don't, you know, whatever you kind of review you want to leave. But it just tells iTunes that people are listening, and it just makes it easier for others to find it. If they search, for example, for near-death experiences in the iTunes store, they're likely to find it. Now, I know there's tons of podcast readers and feeds and so forth, and I ask you, you know, however you want to contact me, please do. I do have an email associated with this podcast. It's neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to just contact me, let me know what you're saying or what you're thinking about this show, and any questions or thoughts that you have. I would love to hear them. I would love to answer those questions, so forth. So once again, as always, thank you so much, all of you, for listening.